Hey Bulls Nation, welcome back to the Rebuildable Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Gentile. It's been a while since I've dropped an episode, but really not much has changed with the Bulls. They're still on the outside of the Eastern Conference playoff picture. The same crappy issues still persist with this team. Thank you, Jim Boylan. But now we have injuries to worry about to key pieces like Lauri Markkanen. So we'll get into the Bulls a little bit later on. Edward Schuller Jr. from the Bulls Gold podcast is going to join me to talk about the latest with the team. Originally, he was going to join me earlier in the week to talk all things Bulls, but it was hard to really focus on the Bulls because the NBA world stood still with the passing of Kobe Bryant last Sunday. Bryant and his 13-year-old daughter, Gianna, died in a helicopter crash just outside of Los Angeles. The crash also claimed the lives of seven other victims. And when the news broke on Sunday that Kobe died, I didn't want to believe it. But as reports came out and the story was confirmed, it crushed me. When a celebrity or athlete dies, I get sad, but I don't usually get hurt by it. And for some reason, this one hurt. You know, I'm 31. And just like most Bulls fans around my age, I got the privilege to watch Michael Jordan play. And I remember the second three-peat very vividly. But I don't know if I knew all the nuances of the game of basketball then. You know, I was a fan, but I don't know if I knew the ins and outs like I do now or even when I was in my teens. And when I really started to get deeper into the sport, I was probably about 10 or 11. And the first team I really loved watching was the Lakers in the early 2000s with Shaq and Kobe. And growing up as a chunky kid, I loved Shaq because he just bullied people around because he was big. But I also really appreciated and loved Kobe. And I think I grew to appreciate him more the older I got. You know, when I got into my teens, I really started to see and study what he was doing on the court. And you saw a lot of the same things that, you know, we got to see with MJ. You know, Kobe had the work ethic. He had that competitive side to him. The ability to step up in the clutch. He embodied everything you wanted in a winner. I always looked at him as one of the greatest players in the history of the game. And I think maybe when I was a little bit younger, I might have raged against some of what he did because I thought, oh, man, if he passes Michael, I'm going to have to hear about this forever. And I'm going to have to hear about it from the Lakers fan base, which, you know, they can be irritating sometimes when they have a player they really like. But the older I got, man, I really appreciated who Kobe was. And I really liked the fact that he was a student of the game. Loves the ins and outs of the game. How people play. How they train. How they study film. I don't know. I really just appreciated everything he did for the game of basketball. And, you know, hearing about the passing of his daughter was really gut-wrenching because you were seeing clips of him at games with her and he seemed to be at peace with his life and really taking that next step, which a lot of former athletes struggle with. You know, when they retire, it's almost like they fall into this abyss, some of these guys. And Kobe was able to find that next chapter. And it's unfortunate that it ended at the age of 41. This is somebody that you would have loved to have seen him at his Hall of Fame induction later this year. It would have been great to see him as an ambassador of the game as he got older. But, you know, we were robbed of that. And, you know, there were, of course, eight other victims robbed of their livelihoods, too. It was just a very tragic day. And, you know, like most of the NBA world, you know, I stood still and most Bulls fans stood still. The whole NBA world just stopped, and for good reason. One positive you get is you get to reflect on really the career of a legend like Kobe, and that you think back to when he first came in the league, you know, the air balls against Utah in his first playoff series and how he grew from that. And you think about that first, you know, three titles he won with Shaq in LA and how awesome those teams were. It took me back to my youth thinking of that. And just thinking of how he became, in the second act of his career, the key piece to those title teams in 2009, 2010, how he went from a sidekick with Shaq to then somebody leading the Lakers to championships. I want to bring in Edward Schuler now from Bulls Gold to talk about Kobe Bryant. And Edward, thanks for coming on. Before we get to the Bulls, I just wanted to start by, you know, getting your thoughts on Kobe's legacy and his impact on the league.
So for me personally, I'm about 31 years old, and I came in on like the back half of the Michael Jordan era. So I got to see most of the second three-peat, you know, the like 93, like some of that. But I think for a lot of people, especially players in this league right now, Kobe Bryant was really the first superstar whose career and life we really got to see on a grand stage. Like, sure, there were Shaq and Kevin Garnett and Allen Iverson and, I mean, Tim Duncan, but Kobe was that first, like, really, really superstar player who we got to see just out, and we got to see his rise, we got to see his fall, we got to see his struggles, we got to see his peak, we got to see the titles, we got to see all of that. So Kobe Bryant, for the most part, was this generation's Michael Jordan. And it's comparable to if Michael Jordan had passed away 2 or 3 years after he retired, maybe the first time. And Kobe Bryant was still young, like 41 years old. And you hear all of the stories that people NBA players are putting out on Twitter. And it's just crazy, right? Like, it seems like every NBA player, no matter how great, could just be just a reserve player, but everybody has a Kobe story. Kyle Anderson of the Memphis Grizzlies has a Kobe story. So it's just all of these players were impacted so much. All of these fans were impacted so much. And then you go into the entertainment world and you think about what he was doing post-retirement. He was creating so many different lanes, you know, in the entertainment business. He was a big proponent of women's basketball. He was doing things with movies. Like, he was doing so many different things with the Mamba Academy as well. Like, Kobe Bryant was creating a career outside of basketball that could have been just as great as his career on the court. And I think that's the shocking part about this, is that, you know, past the way his death happened, all of that is just kind of over now.
Before you came on, you know, I kind of shared something similar, that the second act of his life, you know, that first act being the basketball career was so great, but that the second act in his life was going to be even more special. You know, all the contributions he was making to the game of basketball, still through Mamba Academy, with women's basketball, the fact that he won an Oscar on his first attempt, and it sounded like he was going to start really creating a lot of these historical pieces on the game. That, and I heard an interview, I think it might have been with Zach Lowe, I don't have it exactly, you know, memorized, because there were so many different interviews I've watched in the last 3 days, but that he was starting to get his hands on some of the archive footage, and he wanted to do in-depth pieces on people like Bill Russell, Will Chamberlain, some of the older players, so younger fans would be able to appreciate some of the history of the game. I think that's one thing that I really appreciate about Kobe, is that he was really a student of the game. Like, there's a lot of great players that come into the league, but rarely do you get somebody that really knows the ins and outs of every player that came before him. And I think, as somebody like me who's an NBA nerd, I think that's why I always appreciated Kobe Bryant.
And he was able to share that with a lot of players too. He was always open to giving players advice and being that big brother and being that ambassador to the league. Again, everyone had a Kobe story, and he was always putting himself out there to interact with players, to, you know, represent and to be that, you know, big brother for everybody. So he wasn't just that player that a lot of these players saw when they were 12, 13, 11, you know, what have you, on the screen, like, man, that's Kobe Bryant. Like, I'll never really get to interact with him. I'll never really, you know, get to really cross paths with him in the NBA that much. Like, he made himself accessible And to me, that's a really important thing. And you talk about how, you know, smart he was as a basketball player, and, you know, even more so, you know, outside the court. It's just crazy, like, how, like, articulate he was to me. And yeah, it's really hard to put into words how special a person Kobe Bryant was, how special an athlete he was, because I can't recall anything. I can't recall any type of depth that's given this type of reaction, because it's been as equally shocking as it has been unifying. Everyone is talking about it. Everyone has thoughts on it. Everyone is impacted in some sort of way about Kobe Bryant. Like, I live in Charlotte, and while I'm driving on the interstate, I see the Kobe billboards, and you hear people talking about it. People want to know where the Kobe mural is at in Charlotte. There's murals across the world right now for Kobe Bryant in cities that he really has even no association with. That's how you know the impact of someone, when they can just be appreciated in just the most, you know, no random of places, anywhere. He can be appreciated in LA just as he is, in Charlotte just as he is, in Chicago just as he is, in maybe some place like Rhode Island. He just had a huge impact.
I brought this up earlier. Just like you, I'm 31. And, you know, maybe it's the fact that we've, you know, we did watch him almost as a contemporary, you know, only 10 years older than you and I. And when you watch somebody grow up before your eyes, that's part of that same generation, or just a generation before you, like, but still younger, kind of watch him just rise to where he did. You know, maybe that's part of it too. Like, there's a lot of us around that age that really feel impacted by this. Like I said, it's the first, I feel like one of the first celebrity athlete deaths where I actually don't just feel sad, I feel hurt, you know? And I feel like, it seems like, you know, you feel the same, and there's a lot of people, you know, like that feel hurt by something like this.
I absolutely agree with you. And I think that's why, I think you hit a nail on the head here, is that because we're in that similar age bracket that we feel closer to him. And, you know, off topic, but it's kind of how I feel about Derrick Rose. When he became a Bull, I was the same age as Derrick Rose. So to see, you know, him, you know, grow as a basketball player and to see his career develop, like, that felt special to me. And I think that's why Kobe Bryant is special to a lot of people our age. And I imagine that's how people feel about Michael Jordan, the people that were in that age. So it's a very different feeling. Like, I've thought about it each day. I think it's one of those things that it's going to be really tough for everyone to eventually, you know, grieve for this. Like, it's going to take a while, and the NBA is going to honor him all season long. And a lot of times it still doesn't feel real. Like, you still wake up and you're just like, I can't believe it. Kobe Bryant is no longer here, because it felt like he was always going to be in the NBA in some shape or form. It felt like he was always going to be courtside at a Los Angeles Lakers game, or doing something with Mamba Academy, or doing something in the entertainment world, or what have you. Like, it always felt like he was just going to be here, because he was still a very young 41 years old.
You brought up being an ambassador to the league. Like, it's interesting that the Michael comparisons always happen with Kobe. But the one thing that Michael has not done in his post-career, he hasn't really cultivated relationships with existing players. Like, he's always sort of been, you know, Michael was always kind of to himself. And you've kind of seen that in his post-playing career, that he is, you know, very closed off. He's an owner, but he doesn't try to create relationships with a lot of active players. Where Kobe, I mean, there's plenty of stories that we've seen all throughout this week about interactions he's had with a bunch of players in the league. You know, it didn't have to be all-star caliber players, even, you know, guys lower on the totem pole. He's had a lot of ongoing relationships or discussions with them. And that's something you never hear about with Michael.
And it's crazy, because when we talk about the players who kind of, you know, carried the torch for this league in the 80s, or it was like Magic and Bird, right? And then it was eventually Michael Jordan, who took the NBA to to big heights that it had never seen before. And then when Michael was on his way out, I think we kind of had like a little bit of a mix of what, like, maybe like Allen Iverson, Shaq. Like, we had like a little bit mix of that. But then it was Kobe's league. Even when LeBron was in the NBA, it was still Kobe's league, right? It was Kobe was the guy for a long, long time. Even when he wasn't the best player in the league anymore, it was still Kobe's league in a sense. So he took full advantage of that, not only in terms of achievement, but in terms of how he impacted the next generation of players, talking to them, as you mentioned, giving them advice, being accessible to them. Just kind of being there for everyone. He had relationships with everybody. And Jordan, yeah, as you mentioned, Jordan probably has relationships with a very, very select few current NBA players. Like LeBron, I don't know who else after that. It'd be a tough list to make. But Kobe's is more widespread for sure. And his impact is tremendous. Like, you look at, you know, you look at our very own Chicago Bulls. You look at someone like Zach LaVine. He wears his number and he plays just like him. He moves just like him sometimes. Like, these guys sat and watched Kobe Bryant, studied Kobe Bryant, and everyone wanted to be Kobe Bryant. It's crazy.
To kind of tie this into the Bulls too, like, I always felt like there was this interesting connection between the Chicago Bulls and Kobe. And if you look across his career, you had the free agent pursuit in the year 2004. And, you know, if you believe some reports, it seemed like Kobe was really close to coming to Chicago then, had the Lakers not traded Shaq away. The trade pursuit in 2007, the connection with Phil Jackson, Tex Winter, the Michael comparisons. It always felt like the Bulls and Kobe Bryant had this odd connection. And I almost feel like even Bulls fans always seemed to appreciate when Kobe came to play at the UC. It always seemed like he would get standing ovations when he was introduced in the lineup, or it just always seemed like, though, there was this appreciation that Bulls fans had for Kobe.
And I think you mentioned it. I think it's because Kobe had such an overwhelming appreciation for Michael Jordan that he appreciated the Bulls, he appreciated the franchise, he appreciated the city. Kobe wanted to be Michael Jordan, but at the same time, Kobe Bryant wanted to be Kobe Bryant. And he took on those challenges. So Kobe Bryant, if there was a possibility of Kobe Bryant playing for the Chicago Bulls, he was just one of those special players who he had that Jordan mentality where it was just like, okay, I'm going to play for the Bulls and I'm going to carry the torch that this guy did. I'm not afraid to play under the so-called shadow. I'm not afraid of that. I embrace that. And I think Chicago fans saw that in him. They saw that same fire. They saw that same Jordan-esque type of figure in him, and they embraced Kobe. And, you know, it would have been great to see Kobe Bryant play for the Chicago Bulls. I mean, that would have been, it would have been something else. I mean, especially if you won a championship.
Well, I want to kind of entertain that just a little bit. Like, you know, if Kobe Bryant would have signed with the Chicago Bulls and you had a team with Kirk Heinrich, Ben Gordon, Kobe Bryant, Luol Deng, I don't know, how good do you think that team could have been in the Eastern Conference landscape at that time?
They definitely would have been contenders at some point. And they would have been able to, it's possible they would have been able to land another star too. So you think about Kobe Bryant, maybe they actually do land Pau Gasol at some point. Maybe they actually have that timeline the Lakers did, you know?
You probably would have been more willing to part with, you know, a Luol Deng or a Ben Gordon in 2007, 2008 to get Pau Gasol. Might as well make that move. Or maybe you would have traded that first-round pick that ended up being Joakim Noah, maybe to go get Kevin Garnett. Like, the whole landscape of the league would have changed with that single move. I really believe that. If he had signed with Chicago or made his way to Chicago, I think there would have been a lot of different moves that would have been made. It would have been a giant ripple effect across the East.
I agree with you. And I think it's realistic that the Bulls, you know, walk away with an NBA championship during that time. Kobe Bryant, I mean, we're talking about getting Kobe in 2004. I mean, man, there's still, what, 8-9 years of peak Kobe Bryant to build around. I mean, I think it would have been fair that the Bulls eventually win a championship, but you know, 2004 definitely would have been interesting. And it was, to me, it was always interesting how 2007 or was it 08 or whichever one went, because
summer of 07.
Yeah, so that was when the Bulls were coming off a 49-win season. They beat the Miami Heat in that playoff series, and they lost to the prime Detroit Pistons with Chauncey Billups and all those guys in the second round. So a lot of people thought that they were going to make that next jump, and you know, they didn't that season, and some blamed it on the trade rumors. But I always thought it was interesting for a while how – and John Paxson has his faults, absolutely, but I always thought it was interesting how he got blamed for not wanting to trade Luol Deng for Kobe Bryant, when it was really the situation that Kobe Bryant did not want them to trade Luol Deng and was not going to go to the Bulls unless Luol Deng was still there. So it was just like, it seemed like a deal to get Kobe Bryant was almost impossible because the Lakers wanted Deng and Kobe did not want them to give it up. So it was just like, how do you get it done outside of that? But if you were able to, and you were able to keep Kirk Heinrich somehow and trade everyone else, I mean, yeah, Kirk Heinrich, Kobe Bryant, Luol Deng, I don't know who the power forward would have been, but if you eventually get Pau Gasol, I mean, yeah, that's a championship team at that point.
Yeah, I mean, my guess is you probably at that time, if you had to trade everybody but Luol Deng, probably would have parted with Ben Gordon, Ben Wallace because of salary, and probably Joakim Noah as well, because you would have to give him something of value in a future first. So it would have been you would have gutted a good chunk of the roster, but if you have Kobe Bryant, I mean, you can figure out the rest later. Anytime you nail a star down, you gotta take that opportunity.
You can find role players anytime. And yeah, the whole relationship with Kobe Bryant in Chicago was definitely very, very notable. I think it was interesting how Kobe seemingly embraced all the similar like teams that Michael Jordan had notable history with. Like even if you talk about the New York Knicks, like Kobe, when he went to the Garden, he always wanted to put on a show, just like Michael Jordan did. So yeah, I think people saw those Jordan-esque qualities in Kobe Bryant, and it was hard not to embrace him. He was a star. He carried himself like a star. He was ruthless. He was smart. He was clever. He was skillful. He was everything you want a superstar to be. And that's kind of how we thought Michael Jordan was.
And I want to just end, you know, our conversation on Kobe with, you know, I feel like it's been a rough year for the NBA. When we had the passing of David Stern, really beginning of the month, and now Kobe. How do you think All-Star Weekend's going to be in Chicago? We know there's going to be some tributes to Kobe with the way that they've added stipulations to the game, but just in general, how do you feel that entire All-Star Weekend is going to be this year in Chicago with, you know, the passing of David Stern and Kobe Bryant?
It's going to be really different. It's going to be, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of grieving. I'm sure there are going to be some sad moments because, again, as you mentioned, both players were such a significant part of the NBA's history. And we know Kobe Bryant was a significant part of the All-Star game for so long, like dunk contests, winning MVPs in the All-Star game, a ton of memorable moments. He made, what, 18 All-Star appearances? So I think it's going to be – there's going to be some sad times, but I do think the league is going to do a good job of still being able to keep things upbeat. And it's going to be interesting to see how players pay tribute to Kobe Bryant in terms of any skill competition, in terms of a dunk contest, which Kobe Bryant did. And it's going to be interesting to see how hard players play in the All-Star game, because that's been a big critique for a while, is that players don't take this game seriously and fans want to see a serious game. And Kobe Bryant was known for taking the All-Star game very seriously. So it'll be interesting to see if everyone kind of steps it up a notch now.
Well, I think that would be the ultimate tribute to Kobe if it was a really competitive All-Star game. So the best way to honor his legacy for sure. I wanted to get into, you know, a little bit of Bulls talk. We, of course, had the game last night in Indiana, and it was just sort of a really gut-wrenching loss. I wanted to get your thoughts on just the Bulls' performance against the Pacers. There were some positives to take away, but overall, your thoughts on that game.
I think the full game, I think the first four quarters for sure is a giant positive for the team, because they played a pretty good Indiana team to a deadlock. And they did it with Cristiano Felicio, Luke Kornet in the rotation, and no Wendell Carter Jr., no Lowry Markkanen, no Otto Porter, no Daniel Gafford. The Bulls are significantly undermanned right now, and that's not to say that they'd be a great team if they weren't, but the fact that they were still able to take a really good team like Indiana down to the wire is pretty impressive. I mean, the Bulls have not, lately the Bulls aren't playing as badly, but it feels like it's kind of up and down. Like, there's stretches where they do play bad and there's stretches where they don't, but lately they've been fine and they've been more competitive in these games. Well, a little bit more competitive in these games against good teams. But I think that if Zach LaVine is actually gets his foul that he should have gotten from Victor Oladipo, and the NBA acknowledged that in their last 2 minutes report, then the Bulls probably win that game last night, but it wasn't called, and then they just fall apart in overtime. And I think that's the one thing that's been consistent about the Bulls this season, is they just don't know how to close games. They just don't know how to do it. I think a lot of times they're overly relying on Zach LaVine to do everything when it's really close, and they just don't have the other threats outside of him that really want to step up. So it's been a tough thing. And then when you throw on top of it how Jim Boylan can manage the game, he's not very good at it. So it's just a lot of different factors that contribute to it. But that's been this consistent theme all year. The Bulls don't know how to win against good teams, and they don't know how to win close games.
Well, and it's interesting because you said, like, if you look at the whole body work almost for the entire game, it's probably up until those last 3 minutes of the fourth quarter. I mean, you were watching Cristiano Felicio contribute in this game.
Yeah.
And you're watching Chandler Hutchison with one of, you know, his best games. He puts up a career high last night. And you're kind of feeling good, like, okay, you got some of these guys really earning their keep or showing that they can be key contributors. I think more with Hutchison, that's a guy you want to see him get quality minutes. You want to see Denzel Valentine get quality minutes and play well, and we saw that. And then to have it end the way it ended is just, it's a gut punch. You know, one interesting stat, they're 1-19, the Bulls, against winning teams. And, you know, the one win, I think, came against an undermanned Clippers team where basically they were rusting everybody. I feel like that's really telling, because if you want to be a team that gets into the playoffs or is a playoff contender, I mean, you have to at least probably be 500 or close to 500 against teams with winning records. You have to be able to compete night in and night out against those teams. And I think that's the telling stat. That's probably why they're going to keep being on the outside looking in.
Yeah, and that's probably why they're just going to remain on pace to win 30, 31, 32 games like they have most of the season, because they just can't beat the good teams. It's crazy. Like, as you mentioned, if the Clippers play their healthy team, like they play their team at full strength against the Bulls, they probably win that game by a lot. That's the difference between the Bulls being 0-20 against winning teams. It's just nuts. Like, I've never seen anything like it with this team. I know they were bad last year against winning teams, but that game is the difference between 0-20. And it's
if they are able to close some of these games out, and if Jim Boylan manages the game well enough, manages when to call timeouts, how to manage the rotation, there's a good chance maybe, you know, they had probably 10 losses, in my opinion, 10 losses that I think are on him. And I often wonder, like, if you had another coach on that bench, could this Bulls team actually be firmly locked in at the seventh seed right now? I actually think they would be.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, and I think back to the game earlier in the season against the Los Angeles Lakers, where the Bulls were up big going into the fourth quarter and just completely collapsed. And I would say that loss is significantly on Jim Boylan. But I agree with you. I think if the Bulls did have a better head coach, this team would be in a better position, and I think fans would feel more encouraged about this team going forward. I think that's the big part right now, is that when you watch this team with Jim Boylan, it's like, sure, there's some games where they play well and you feel fine about it, but I don't think anyone trusts this team long term. So it's just a question of, okay, what does it mean though? Because no one wants to watch this team be managed by Jim Boylan for the next 3, 4, 5 years or however many. So it's like, okay, they played well against Indiana, but do you trust that to carry over the next time they play Indiana, or the next time they play, they go to Indiana and play? Like, it's just, no one trusts it. But hey, I mean, you give them props. They played well. And as you mentioned, like, someone like Chandler Hutchinson came in at a career high, was looking like a beast in transition, grabbing and go, playing good defense. Chandler Hutchinson last night looked like a really, like, really good two-way player.
Well, and I think this is the conundrum that I'm having. Like, do you really want to see this team make a playoff push, or is it really even worth it? Like, do they deserve to get into the playoffs with maybe 35 wins in the 8th seed? Or, you know, especially if you have to watch Jim Boylan coach this team in the playoffs and possibly, I'm not saying earn his way, but coax Bulls management into thinking he's fit for this job because they made the playoffs. I'm kind of conflicted. Like, I don't want to see this team actively tank, but I don't know if I want to see them get into the playoffs. And that's kind of sad to even think that, but I'm at that point where I don't know if I want to see them get into the playoffs. And I'm usually one of those guys that likes to see young guys get some experience in the postseason, but I just feel like there'll be awful ramifications because of it.
And I feel the same exact way as you. I don't know what I want out of this season anymore, because I think when we were talking about playoffs in the offseason, the ideal circumstance was that, okay, the Bulls are a competitive and decent team, and they go 500, or maybe they finish like 40-42 or something like that. I don't know. But they're a competitive team, and they make the playoffs because they're a decent team, not because they stumble, hit their head on the tree, and they just somehow make the eighth seed anyway. Like, that was not the ideal goal. But that seems to be the only realistic way they make the playoffs right now, given the trends that we've seen. And like you, I don't really know what to do. I'm not rooting for losses, but when they beat the Cavs and then they lose by like 15 to the Milwaukee Bucks, I'm just like, okay, I don't know what this is accomplishing. I don't know what this is doing. And now that we know that the young core that we were really hype about in the offseason is in question, it's a matter of, okay, the playoff experience, you know, quote unquote, that they're getting from getting swept by Milwaukee, is that really something that you value at this point? Because this may not even be a core that you think is going to get anywhere. So I don't know. I think this is, it's a bad place for this team to be right now, where it's just like, you don't know what anything really means long term. But then it's just like, okay, you don't want them to lose either, because this draft sucks. But I mean, I don't know. And then you throw on the front office thing too, because it's like, if the Bulls make the playoffs, the front office is validated and Jim Boylan is validated. If they don't make the playoffs, then there's a higher chance that changes happen. So I think a lot of Bulls fans are just clinging on to that hope that changes happen, because they want to be interested in this team again. And I know a lot of fans out there who are not going to be interested in this team again if John Paxson, Jim Boylan, and Gar Forman are back next season.
I think I brought this up when I was on Bulls Gold with you and Salem. Is, you would love to see this young core play in spite of Boylan, right? Like, if for some reason out of the All-Star break, Lauri Markkanen, you know, is a little healthier and really plays up to the level we thought he could play at, and Zach LaVine's playing like he is right now, you know, you have Otto Porter back and he plays well. If Wendell Carter comes back healthy, like, if those guys are the reason that you go on this push and you do get into the playoffs, I think it's a totally different story then, because you get to see that young core take you into the postseason. But yeah, stumbling in like right now with a banged up roster, Zach LaVine playing hero ball every night, and basically the Nets and Magic playing themselves out of the postseason. Like, does that really validate anything that route? No. But if it's your young core doing it, I think I would maybe feel a little bit better about it.
Yeah. And I agree with you because, but I know for sure that, and you probably know it too, if the Bulls do make the playoffs and after they get swept by Milwaukee, the end of season, John Paxson is going to be sitting there saying, hey, we said our goal was to make the playoffs and we made the playoffs. That's all they have to say. And they are technically right. And they are technically validated by it. And then they're going to say, hey, Jim Boylan did a lot with an undermanned roster, injuries, all these different problems. We still believe in him because he did a lot with less.
Well, and, you know, if you want to bring that outside voice in that we've heard reports about, like, they probably have to miss the playoffs for that to happen. So yeah. If they miss the playoffs, your silver lining is that you're probably going to get a new head coach and you're probably going to get that outside voice. And you can't see it because this is an audio production, but I'm doing air quotes, outside voice. I'm not totally sold on that, but, you know, it's something maybe we can hang our hat on. It just, I'll believe it when I see it.
Yeah, I don't know what the outside voice, I don't know who that outside voice is going to be at all. I mean, John Paxson got this job, former player, did radio for the Bulls. I don't know. It seems like Jerry Reinsdorf, for the most part, it does a lot of internal hires, and he hires people that he can trust. So I don't know who this guy is around the league that Jerry Reinsdorf all of a sudden is going to trust to make bigger decisions than John Paxson and Gar Foreman. So I don't know. But as you said, this is such a tough decision because you just don't know what to. You don't know what to root for. There's consequences on both sides that are not very preferable.
No, absolutely not. So it's like, that's why it is like a conundrum. You're like, okay, I really would love to actively root for my team. But I also know that if I see this team in the playoffs, it's just going to be unguided validation. Yeah. And it's a horrifying thought with the direction of this team. One last thing, you know, to keep on that point of the outside voice, the one name that I keep thinking in my head, and I don't, there's no reports about this, there's no speculation that I've heard, but I just could totally see Jerry Reinsdorf and probably John Paxson selling to Bulls fans that this outside voice is somebody like a Will Perdue, somebody that is an analyst just watching the team. And, you know, is still tight with the organization, still tight probably with Jerry Reinsdorf, but selling that as an outside voice to Bulls fans. Like, that's my concern, is that's the type of guy that they would hire and not somebody within the league.
See, I like Will Perdue as a voice of reason after games, but as we know, being a voice of reason after games doesn't necessarily mean that you can run the team really well either, because I mean, John, you could put John Paxson on after a Bulls game and he can tell you everything that went wrong and what he would do, but running a team is a completely different story. And that's actually not a bad idea, at least from like a Reinsdorf standpoint, to sell fans on to say, hey, he's from outside the organization and he's a fan, or not a fan favorite, but he's somebody you're familiar with, he has history with the team, he's someone that can help.
That's history repeating itself, though, isn't it? Like, that's what they probably said 16 years ago when they hired Pax.
Yeah, it is. It absolutely is. And, you know, someone I was thinking about while you were mentioning Will Perdue that I could see as a candidate, and I'm not sure what his role is with the Orlando Magic, or maybe he's not even with the Orlando Magic at all right now, but Matt Lloyd was a very popular guy among like forums and blogs, because when the Bulls were drafting really well during that period from like, what, 2003 to 2010-ish or something like that, Matt Lloyd was working with the Bulls and was a big part of that. And then he left to go to Orlando. So he has history of Jerry Reinsdorf. He has history of John Paxson and Gar Foreman. I mean, I could see that as someone that they would sell as an outside voice because a lot of people really liked Matt Lloyd at one point. So that's someone I would throw out there as a candidate.
That, you know what? That's always been a guy that I've thought if it did happen, like I thought of this back in, I think, 2017 and 2018, if somebody within the front office like Gar was let go, that would probably be somebody they would try to tap. I'm looking right now. He is still part of the Orlando Magic, but yeah, that would be an interesting name. I mean, he did have a pretty decent track record here. He was really highly regarded around the league. So that wouldn't be a total shock, I guess, if he did end up maybe coming back here, being that outside voice. So that would definitely be an interesting name. Probably a little bit better than Will Perdue. Just a smidge.
What would be the position, like what would be the title of this person? Like would the title literally just be outside voice?
Yeah. Yeah, outside voice. He's gonna get paid very, very large amounts of money to just be an outside voice. So he will never be at the Advocate Center. He's gonna analyze everything from his couch. Or he'll have one of those, you know, like those rentable office spaces.
Yeah.
You just rent a cubicle in like a larger office with a bunch of other people that work remotely. It's one of those kind of things, you know. So like,
I'm picturing him with a desk on wheels that can only go outside the Advocate Center and the United Center, and just kind of like throwing rocks at the window of John Paxson, telling him who to draft.
that would actually be a lot more entertaining. He's just sitting outside in a tent.
Yeah, he greets fans and tells them, you know, what he's doing for the day. Like, yeah, I'm coming up with trade ideas for John Paxson, and I'm going to get my pigeon to fly in with a bottle into his office to deliver it to him.
And Doug Collins comes outside to yell at him. that's all that happens on a daily basis.
Oh yeah, that's very realistic, man. But we'll see what comes of that. I'm skeptical what's gonna go down with that, but I'm clinging. My instinct right now is still telling me to cling to that chance that Gar Foreman, John Paxson, and Jim Boylan can be dismissed.
I think the scenario I could totally see happening if they don't make the playoffs, I do think it's Gar. I think it's Jim. You know, it would not surprise me if John stays on, but, you know, there's a possibility, you know, he could kind of be pushed into some fake advisory role, or that his role as executive VP is a diminished role. That wouldn't surprise me because it's just to keep him on as a salaried employee.
Yeah, like a special assistant to the owner or something like that, or...
Yeah, another fake position, like the Doug Collins position. I'm not trying to pick on Doug. I like Doug, but... you know, he's just a grumpy old man from what it sounds like. If you read Cowley's articles, he just sounds like a grumpy old man.
I'm cool with Doug if he gets Gar Foreman out, but I absolutely do not want Doug Collins running the Bulls.
No. Yeah. No, you know, what would scare me is if Doug ends up being like a very powerful voice and brings his son in because, you know, Chris is struggling at Northwestern. I'm just saying, like... If he wanted a gig, he could be an executive with the Bulls or maybe the next head coach.
That is a fear.
That's what I worry about, is more nepotism within the Bulls. Like, that's the last thing the Bulls need right now.
Yeah, we talked about that before. Like, we were just saying how it'd be great if they're out, but this could be entirely a power move by Doug Collins to take over. And we were just like, oh, no. It's like the devil you don't know is worse than the devil you do know.
I'm cool, like, again, if Matt Lloyd is like, or somebody in the league is an outside voice that sits outside the Advocate Center, let Doug go outside and yell at him. I'm cool with that. That's fine. Tell him to get off the Advocate Center lawn. That I'm fine with.
Oh man.
All right, well, Edward, I really appreciate you coming on to talk of course about Kobe, talk about the Bulls. Real quick, where can people find Bulls Gold Podcast, and where can they find you on Twitter?
Find me on Twitter at Edward Schuler, Schuler is the last name, Junior. Follow Bulls Gold on Twitter at Bulls Gold. New episodes out each week on iTunes, Spotify, typically any podcast platform out there. And yeah, man, thank you for having me on, man. Really, really good to talk about Kobe and some of the some of the struggles we have going on with this Bulls team and all the conundrums that we're having this season.
Yeah, it's been a rough year, but we'll get through it. Thank you so much again, and we'll definitely have you on again.
All right, appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Rebuildable Podcast. Be sure to check out more episodes on Google Play, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and on Rebuildable.com.